Good morning, everyone. Story County Board of County Commissioners, Malcolm Gordon. Anybody has any cell phones or any other audible devices, if you'll silence them now, it's not to disrupt the rest of the meeting, we'd appreciate it. If you stand and join me in the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Happy New Year to everyone. We haven't met for about a month, and lots happened since then. Christmas and the New Year's holiday. We're going to start off on item number 3. This is election of the chairman to the Story County Board of Commissioners for the term of 1 year. Pursuant to Story County Code 2.04.008. Mr. Whitten. Staff recommendations?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. It is my pleasure to make a recommendation on both item 3 and 4. Starting with 3, one of the things my parents taught me that did manage to sink in and stick with me through the years is if it's not broken, don't fix it. I think I've reviewed this verbally with Commissioner Gilman, who is not here today. And he fully concurs, even though he can't vote, that we have a great chairman right now, so it's my pleasure to recommend that we continue and reappoint Commissioner Marshall McBride as the chairman of the Story County Commissioners for 2018.
Okay, thank you. This time we'll go ahead and open up for nominations for chairman.
Okay. The way we've had it going here with Marshall in, as a chairman, now, I've living here in Story County for 20 years. I've seen a few boards, and nobody has impressed me more than Marshall and how you hold yourself in this position. And I really appreciate the job that you do. So I make a motion to nominate you as the chairman of the board.
Thanks, Jack. I appreciate that. I appreciate the confidence that Lance and yourself have in me. I appreciate this job. I enjoy this job as being a commissioner. And also sharing this board with the meetings that we have. So thank you. I'll second your motion. And we've been moved to second to nominate myself as the chairman. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Public comment.
Thank you. Got ahead of myself there. I'll open up for public comment. Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries unanimously. Moving along now to item number 4. This is election of the vice chairman to the Story County Board of Commissioners for the term of 1 year pursuant to Story County Code 2.04.008. Once again, Mr. Whitten, staff recommendations.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My pleasure. Same story, different name. And although Commissioner McGuffey gets little opportunity to really exercise his duties as the vice chair, when he does need to, he does so exemplary. And I might add, when you look at the committee assignments today in particular, pay close attention to the heavy load that Jack has taken on. So it's my pleasure to recommend we continue and reappoint Commissioner McGuffey as the Vice Chairman of the Story County Board of Commissioners for 2018.
Great. Thank you, Pat. Yeah, with that being said, I've worked with Jack for 3 years, and he's done a terrific job going ahead and working on this board. He works countless hours. As Mr. Witt pointed out about the numerous committee meetings that he goes ahead, commission meetings for the different nonprofit organizations and NACO, the Railroad Commission, all of the things that Jack does. So it's a pleasure working with you, Jack, and it's my honor to go ahead and nominate you as the vice chair of the Story County Commission. I have a motion. Do I have a second?
I'll second that.
All right. I have a motion and a second. Do I have any public comment on the nomination for Jack McGuffey? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries unanimously. Congratulations, Jack.
Congratulations.
All right. Thank you. Thank you. We'll move on now to item number 5. This is discussion of possible action. This is approval of the agenda for this date, January 2nd, 2018. Do we have any Any additions or corrections or modifications to today's agenda, Mr. Chairman?
No, Mr. Chairman. We will be continuing several as noted in the agenda, but Austin prefers to go ahead and call those items up and continue them as part of that process rather than continue them as we're setting the agenda. So no changes to what's in the packet.
Okay, very good. With that said, is there any public comment regarding today's agenda? Hearing none, I get a motion for approval.
I'll make a motion to approve today's consent agenda.
Just today's regular agenda.
I mean, just the agenda.
Okay. It's been a motion. I'll second it. It's been moved and seconded to approve the agenda for January the 2nd. All those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries unanimously. Moving along now to item number 6. This will be the consent agenda. Is there any public comment regarding today's consent agenda? Hearing none, I get a motion to approve the consent agenda.
I'll make a motion to approve today's consent agenda.
I'll second your motion. Moved and seconded to approve the consent agenda. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries unanimously. All righty. We're going to move along now to item number 7. This is discussion of possible action. Resolution 18-480, honoring in memoriam Suzanne Sue Ayers Graves of Virginia City. Sheriff Antonoro is going to take the lead on this.
Well, as we all know by now, Sue passed away just before Christmas. I was glad that I had a chance to visit with her just before then, and right up to that point, she's still telling stories on some on you, Marshall, from when you was a youngster. I'll share those with you after the meeting. Sue was a great lady. I think a lot of the people in the room here knew her. Say she spent just over 26 years working for the sheriff's office. Never did get a clear answer from the records, but I know she was on the board of directors at the senior center for a lot of years, and just a wonderful gal. She has provided a lot of historical connections for the sheriff's office from days of yore, and some of them on some pretty significant cases, and I think it's only proper that we recognize her contributions both to the sheriff's office and to our community. So. With that, I'd like to have Sarah, her daughter, come up. I suppose you'd like me to read the resolution?
I would, yeah. So that Sarah Jensen is Sue's daughter, retired county employee from the recorder's office, my old schoolmate from high school. Welcome, Sarah.
Go, my first.
Right. Sheriff, if you read the resolution.
So resolution 18-480 in memoriam of Suzanne Ayers Graves by the Story County Board of Commissioners. Whereas the Story County Commissioners remembers the dedicated service of Suzanne Ayers Graves and is saddened at her passing. Whereas Suzanne Ayers Graves served as an employee of the Sheriff's Office for 26 years, and in retirement continued to provide assistance and counsel to the office of the sheriff right up till the time of her passing. Whereas Suzanne Ayers Graves was more than just an employee of the county government, but had deep ties to our communities going back decades, always having time for family, friends, and neighbors, and even serving for many years on the board of the Virginia City Senior Center. Whereas Suzanne Ayers Graves earned the respect, admiration, and high regard of all who had the pleasure of knowing and working with her, and while in recent years she could not be part of the Story County community, the county has sustained a great loss in her death. Now, therefore, be it resolved on behalf of the citizens, the sheriff, the Story County Board of Commissioners, extend sincere regret to Suzanne Graves' family members for their loss, and the hope that her family will be consoled by the memories of her life and contributions to community. Be it further resolved that this resolution be made part of the official minutes of Story County, and that an official copy of this expression of our deepest sympathies be presented to her family, dated the second day of January 2018.
Right. Thank you, Sheriff.
I do have to add one more thing. I've been talking with someone who had worked with Sue back in the old days. He said that Suzanne could be a bear to work for or work with at the sheriff's office, but as much of a taskmaster as she was, she's the one who kept the glue, or she was the glue that kept the machine running. So just had to add that.
Yeah, there's a lot of truth to that. I believe when Sheriff DeCarlo hired her, I think he hired her simply as dispatcher, and before you knew it, she was like the office manager, and she was taking care of all kinds of stuff, personnel, and yeah, a lot of years of service.
Of course, they were, for years they lived at the senior center, and so I saw them a lot, and I, when they kind of disappeared, I really missed them. They're a feisty couple, you know. Had a little fire in them. So I miss them, and I'm sorry for your loss.
That feistiness runs in the family. All right. Is there any public comment regarding this resolution? Anybody have anything they want to say? Okay. If I can go ahead and get a motion for approval.
Glad to. I recommend the approval of resolution number 18-480 to recognize Suzanne Graves.
Second your motion. Then move the second to approve this resolution. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carried unanimously.
I think Vanessa has the actual resolution for you. Alrighty, we're going to move along now to item number 8. This is discussion only. We'll take no action or public comment. These are committee and staff reports. And in the interest of time, Mr. Nevin needs to get back onto the project. So if I can get Mike Nevin to start off today.
Good morning, commissioners, and once again, Happy New Year. We delve into 2018. We couldn't ask for better weather on the Comstock, especially for the sewer improvement project that has been ongoing since September. Just to give you a little bit of an update to where we are today, we're 287 days remaining to substantial completion. We're about 25% complete in the project. As of this morning, there has been over 11,000 feet of sewer pipe installed, 62 manholes, quite a bit of substantial repaving, specifically P, a portion of Washington from R to L, all of L, most of I Street. There's still a little bit of work left on I, all of H. And so we're moving along, as far as that's concerned, to try to button up some of these areas that have been disturbed because of the excavation for the pipe. This week, we're focused on completing the portion in front of the elementary school on D Street. And some of us may recall back in 1992, we had a sinkhole event that occurred in front of the school just after the buses left on October afternoon. And it was a pretty substantial sinkhole. It was most likely caused by a failure in a water line that opened up the Bonner Shaft, which was part of the Gold and Curry Mine Works back in the day. So we're traversing through a portion of that area, and when that shaft was capped, the cap was down about 30 feet, so we're going to avoid that. Some of the engineered fill will be compromised, but it'll be put back just as it is when, you know, they find it. So we hope to get out of that area this week. It makes it nice because school is out this week, so we don't have teacher, student traffic, school buses, so on and so forth. There'll be a little bit of an inconvenience to the traveling public on that portion of D Street between Washington and Flowery. That area will be closed until we get across the road there. The other thing we hope to complete this week is the bore and jack that goes underneath State Route 341, just a little bit east and south of the Fourth Ward School. That's where the existing sewer line crosses the road there from the divide. And so we'll be installing a sleeve underneath the highway. And in order to do that, we've got to bore underneath the highway instead of opening it up. So there'll be some traffic caution around that area. They're hoping that possibly tomorrow they may start that, with that being completed by Friday afternoon there. The other thing, and I think Mr. Witten made aware at your meeting in December, was the fact that we ran into some ruins of the Savage Mining Works down here on East Street, part of the hoisting work assembly. We're working through that. We pretty much have completed the first portion of that treatment through what was probably a maintenance tunnel for the hoisting works machinery itself. We thought we had the green light to proceed. We did have it to proceed, and then within 45 minutes we hit something a little bit further to the north of that, and we think it's a part of the old boiler workings there. The good thing about that find is the state and the Bureau of Land Management, State Historic Preservation, considering one find, if you will, one discovery. So the remediation for the second find won't be as delayed as the first one. It's been almost about 30-day delay getting through that area. Of course, those folks down there on that portion of East Street want to see us in and out of there. So we only have about 100 foot left to a pipe to place within that area. But, you know, we'll work through that, and hopefully we'll get back on that as well this week. So things are progressing nicely. Once again, you know, folks have been really understanding. The contractor's been great to work with. So I think, you know, hopefully it continues that way throughout the rest of the project. I'm confident that it will. You know, we always find a few snags and a few unexpected things that occur, and sometimes you have to work around those, and that's what it's all about. We find some interesting stuff as far as, you know, the old sewer and water lines and how they were installed many, many years ago. So lots of photos, you know, to come and be shared eventually. So unless you have any questions, that's about all I got.
One, Chad.
Go ahead. With talking about the paving that's going on, is there any plans to pave the south section of O Street from Washington? Because I think that's still dirt on that section there by the ferry residence.
We hadn't anticipated doing anything there, Marshall. That would be a county deal. Okay. I know that they did regravel that. Yeah. You know, there's one home just south of Washington that's fairly recent that Jim Collins had just finished. And then there's a gentleman that's building a second home just a little bit to the south of that. But that area has all been re-graveled.
Okay.
So I don't know of any immediate plan at this point to do any overlay there. You know, it wouldn't necessarily be a portion of the sewer project
itself.
We'll
look at that going forward.
But we're looking into some of these streets and roads. As you folks are well aware, we've been holding off, you know, for a few years now doing anything, anticipating this big project, and then hopefully, you know, getting some of those that are in worse shape than others.
And as more houses are popping up along these streets, the residents are wanting to have their street paved.
And I tell you, they're really appreciative of it, too. I mean, and it looks nice, too. Because you know what people see at the end of the job? They see how the surface looks, you know, really, and how it drives. And, you know, if it makes them happy, that's what it's all about. So, you know, as we proceed, there'll be more of that. It just depends on how the weather holds up. Maybe we can do some more of it this winter, you know.
I'm just curious about the boiler room or section that you discovered. Was that discovered by exploring the first break, or was that?
Well, as we proceeded south, going through there, Jack, we discovered some more of the granite footings, if you will.
Oh.
And there's some brickwork that's underneath some of those. So what I'd like to see there actually is, if we can, is to lift those big pieces of granite out, you know, as much intact as we can, and then utilize those. They're talking about eventually putting up a state historic preservation marker maybe down there near the site. So to, you know, finish off, you know, a nice marker with some of that we find there would be, you know, interesting to folks. The other thing, as far as the tunnel that was discovered, the part of the treatment was a 3D image that they made that turned out really nice, and their hopes are to eventually incorporate that, you know, as part of your display down here in the Slammer Museum, and then, you know, have that broadcast on your TV screen there with a little blurb about, you know, what it was and how it was discovered. So, you know, it's just interesting history we wouldn't have found otherwise.
Oh, yeah.
You know, if I may, before Mike disappears, I'm going to ask him to comment on one more thing. But first off, I'm going to talk about paving. And in areas like O Street and others, this is a golden opportunity. The comptroller has done a very good job allocating money for this. If you picture, on average, Ames is responsible in their contract bid for somewhere between 7 and 9 feet, depending. It's wider in areas like L Street, where they had to basically rip out the entire paved surface because of the tunnel. But we partnered with them, and they've selected Cruise Construction. We've gotten it cleared as a public works job because it's part of the contract, but we're basically taking advantage of Ames volume pricing, and we're trying to repave as much of our streets as we possibly can, you know, and as we possibly can afford. So all you got to do is just send Hugh and I a list. I think we did 8th Street, Mike, for $40,000.
No, it was less than that.
Okay.
I think it turned out less, around $30,000.
Yeah, our portion. So it's, and 8th Street looks like a super highway now.
And that was, you know, that section south of Washington, clear to the end, you know. So,
If you've got a street, we're not necessarily going to do much more paving now because of temperatures. I think we snuck in as much as we can. We may get a couple more days and try to spin up a few. But once we get above the ambient temperatures of 40 degrees. I'd also like, Mike mentioned Ames, and of course I keep saying this, but, you know, I want to talk about not only the snags, but the opportunities, the paving, but also we're working, if you start seeing some black pipe laying around, why don't you go ahead and kind of fill them in there?
For many years, actually, the state of Nevada Department of Transportation has some, we call them DIs, drop inlets, that take storm water off of C Street. On the south end of Virginia City, there are four of those that exist from basically Flowery Street south to the Fourth Ward School. They're tied into the existing sewer system, and it's never been a good picture. There's always been issues, especially in the wintertime, with salt on the road on C Street. It affects the operation at the treatment plant significantly by killing off the bugs that eat the bacteria. So we've been researching, even when I was as a public works director a couple of years ago, about working with NDOT to see if we can come up with a remedy to get those storm drains off of the sewer system, anticipating, of course, that we're, you know, going to replace all of that sewer line infrastructure. They put their engineers to work on it, and initially the county had, you know, kind of a gentleman's agreement with them that we might be able to fund up to about, you know, half of the cost of doing that work. They put their engineering folks on it, and the last estimate we got from them was about $1.5 million. So through, you know, putting our heads together with this project going on, we think, well, we know that we can at least reduce those costs significantly, maybe less than $200,000, by coming up with an interim fix, if you will. I mean, it might not be the permanent fix, but, you know, it could be something that could last for many, many years, and that's running some existing piping that was a part of the project that was used for a bypass line from the divide that routed around the transfer station and then back into the sewer just below the high school. That's what they call HDPE pipe. It's a high-density polyurethane black pipe, if you will. It's 8-inch in diameter. So instead of, you know, the contractor utilizing that or selling it off to somebody else, you know, we kind of had agreed to at least buy the pipe, maybe pay them a little bit for some of their expense as far as fuel for the equipment. You know, pretty good deal. You know, no labor involved. It's going to save substantially. So actually a portion of that pipe has already been placed along the Flowery Street right-of-way. And we have it now that comes up actually onto E Street above the railroad tracks. And it's our hope we'll be able to utilize part of the existing concrete sewer that comes off of C, both at Flowery and at Silver Street, that will tie into this line. And then it will, you know, dump in the canyon as it always has, you know, further east of town here. So I think it's going to be a substantial savings. It's, you know, looking at $1.5 million job for, you know, basically taking care of four drop inlets, you know, on C Street on the south end. That's pretty spendy when you calculate, you know, four into 1.5 mil. But anyway, so I think that's going to be a good fix, and so far they're willing to work with us, and we've kind of given them the green light to proceed because, you know, you can't ask for a better deal as far as I've talked to Pat about it, and it's just going to be, a substantial savings. So that's good news. Where we are with that.
Would this just be a line from C Street to the canyon, basically?
Yeah.
So no other streets would plumb into it?
No, because everything, there are a couple, Jack, down on D Street that the county has that exist that are already tied into the sewer too. So they'll catch those as well. Yeah. But everything on, most of the storm drains are on, you know, C Street that were put in back in the 80s when they redid the sewer, water, storm drain, and then they did the repaving. So most of those now go down and, you know, exit in the Six Mile Canyon drainage. So this will tie into the Six Mile Canyon drainage as well, you know, as it goes below the transfer station there.
Okay. That takes pressure
off.
Yeah. All right. Thank you.
Good deal all the way around, as far as I'm concerned. Anything else?
Thank you, Mike.
Thank you.
Next up from the Sheriff's Office, Sheriff Antonoro.
Nothing at this time.
Okay, let's get back into projects again. Our project coordinator, Mike Northan.
Hey, Mike. Morning, Commissioners. Mike Northan for the record. Let's have a quick update on the projects that I've been working on. First off is the insurance work from the flood event of January 2017. On the demolition and water damage remediation side, we've reached our last site. It's the senior center down in Lockwood. Crews started work down there December 28. Work is ongoing. They're telling me they're going to be going for environmental testing and clearance tomorrow, and that the containments should be coming down on Thursday. On all the other sites, the remediation work is complete. About 95% of the construction estimates have been approved. So I'll be in contact with Belfour's construction foreman today and tomorrow to start scheduling construction activities and coordinating those with the various offices and sites that we have to do work in, to include, you know, access and duration of work, impact, that sort of thing. So I'll know a little bit more about that later this week. On Piper's Opera House, Sierra Builders has successfully gone in and replaced the column and the footing that was washed out when all the water came down through and underneath the crawl space there and displaced a lot of soil into the sort of a storeroom thing there. And so all that soil's been mucked out of there. The column's been replaced and a new footing has been placed. And I'll be in touch with Paul Ferrari to come in and do a final inspection on that, get that signed off. Courthouse roof, Sierra Builders is currently working on the courthouse roof. They're actually up there right now. They're addressing the deterioration on some of the brick surfaces on the interior face of the parapet in preparation of installing the cricket there that will provide a more positive drainage to get rid of the water, alleviating the leak problem that we've had in the clerk's office over there. So that's the current work going on now. They do have the steel frames that are to support the historic chimneys. Those have been fabricated. Those will be getting fitted and installed this week. And masonry work will be proceeding directly after that. On the mailbox project in the VC Highlands, I've had a very difficult time getting any kind of interest in there. Contractors are busy one end of the state to the other. I did get one contractor to take a good serious look at it, and he was not sure that the budget was going to be adequate for our scope of work, so I need to meet with you, Mr. McGuffey, and with the HOA, and we need to discuss how we move forward, whether we want to tailor our scope of work or discuss a phasing strategy to get after this work.
Sure.
So I'll get with you on that. Last thing is the communication tower project. It's going to be an agenda item coming up here, but just to keep the process moving. Mr. Dean and I of the IT department have gone out there personally and put boots on the ground. We've located, identified, and staked the control points that were submitted to us by NDOT, which gives us the center line of the access easement. We've been able to establish the center line and the limits and begin a preliminary target for the bulldozer operator. As that road actually takes real shape and we get a much more higher resolution picture of where that access road will actually be, I'll be able to provide more resolution on the estimate for the trenching, the conduits, pull boxes, and all that stuff that we are going to be installing from the gate up to the site. And so I have, again, more information on that as we proceed on that. So, any questions, sirs?
No, great. Thanks.
Thank you
for the report, Mike. Appreciate it. Next up, we have the Director of Community Relations, Sherry Nevin.
Good morning, Sherry Nevin for the record. Mike just mentioned that they're doing work at the Lockwood Community/Senior Center. In an effort to kind of make things a little bit smoother, we have decided as of this morning to move both the lunch program and the food pantry temporarily to the Rainbow Bend Clubhouse through at least the end of this week. There's some tenting and stuff in that building, and I just thought it's easier for everyone just to move out until they're done with their work and move back in. So that is being taken care of as we speak. We have received our grant awards from State Division of Emergency Management for the 2017 flood major declaration that we had here in the state. We are working diligently to get all of our paperwork in. We're expecting to receive about $115,000 in reimbursement and grant funds. So it is a process of getting everything together. So we'll be working through that as we move forward here. That is all I have. I've got a couple items on the agenda. So.
Anything else, Jen? Great. Thank you, Sherry. The director at the VCTC, Denny Dotson.
Good morning, Commissioners, and Happy New Year, everybody. 2018, it really looks like we're starting out on the ground running with new boards, board members, and building budgets here. Just so we can look at, for instance, Piper's, I'll take first. We're going to work with the county manager and the comptroller building an augmented budget for the rest of this fiscal year to see what we need to get staffing models and in place so we can make that Piper's what it should be and work our way towards a fiscal budget in July 1st. Same thing with the V&T Relay Commission. At our last meeting, we gave notice, if you would, to and let all the contracts that are current expire. So we'll be looking at a total business assessment of that operation and looking to hire an executive director and or outside contractor to run that facility and kind of take the lead as the face of the V&T Railway Commission. So with that, it's just a lot of work to do behind the scenes, not to mention the VCTC and working on our budget there. I know that we have a lot of things there we'll be looking at doing as well. One of them has been brought up in the past, the lodging, transit lodging ordinance in regards to the extended stay. We are currently doing a business impact study at the advice of the district attorney. And once we get that, we'll work with them on bringing it back to the board for making an amendment to that particular ordinance. With that, I also want to say thank you to Public Works. They did an outstanding job on the Black and Howe building throughout the holidays. The weather cooperated, and now we have that building, for the most part, in a safe and new fencing around it, so that if we do get an abundance of snow, it won't collapse. But we'll also be taking a look at that over the next month and what we want to do next. So that's all I've got.
Okay.
Any questions?
Regarding the V&T, I just want everybody to know that Denny's jumped in with both feet. And he's doing a good job.
Thanks, Jack.
Putting everything in place.
Yeah,
we're going through that transitional phase now where we're getting rid of contracts, putting new people in place, and it's looking real good.
It's good.
Thank you. And the decorations were put up at the north end of town look great. We haven't met since that was all done with the assistance of the fire department. I know they came up with their ladder truck and helped get all those lights in.
Yeah, thank you. I stopped by and unplugged them this morning. So over the course of the week, before any bad weather, we'll try and get those down. So they're not up there until March.
That's great, It's great participation this year from the merchants on C Street.
Yeah.
Good job, Denny. Director of Security, Melanie Keener.
Nothing today, thank you.
Just the piece, Ms. Harrington.
Good morning, thank you today. Okay. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year, thank you. Chief Nevin.
Good morning. For the record, Jeff Nevin, Fire Chief. Happy New Year to all of you. Just a couple of quick things. As you all know, Southern California experienced some devastating wildfires last month. We did send a fire engine as part of a one-strike team that went down from this area. There was actually three strike teams that from this area that went down to assist. They spent the entire 2 weeks down there, and we're on two of the major fires, the Thomas and the Creek Fire. from all the feedback I got from the strike team leader who I used to work for. Our crews did an amazing job, helped out wherever they could, and were just an asset to the team. So I wanted to give them thanks for that. We received a sub-grant from the Nevada Division of Forestry for fuels reduction work that we're going to start out in the Highlands Geiger Summit area, kind of continue on from what we've been doing the past few years. This is a $252,000 grant, and it'll span over, I believe, 5 years. So you may have seen some plastic piles out there off the side of the road if you're noticing that. That's part of this work. We've covered the piles that we've created to be able to burn them when we get a little bit of precipitation on the ground, so we don't have to dig them out from the snow if we get it, hopefully. So again, that'll continue on. We're just trying to find a temporary staffing company to help us with our personnel needs. So once we get that in place, we'll be moving out there. So we did open burning for the Mark Twain area. I hold off on that for as long as I could, because of the weather that we did not get. But once we got a little bit of rain and some snow, the few moistures went down enough, and we were comfortable with allowing the people that, you know, those folks have been burning down there for years. They're very cognizant and capable. So we did open that up and have had no issues with escaped burns, except for one on that windy night that we had a few weeks ago. But it was picked up very quickly. Did lose some abandoned vehicles, but no structure losses. So. And then finally, our U-Call WeHaul trailers are very busy, and that's the free service we provide to take out to our slash pile in the Mark Twain, or the Highlands area, and it has been very busy in the Mark Twain area because we did close that pile down there. Hopefully in the future we can open that up for those residents. It was a very helpful thing for them, so we're looking at ways to try and improve that and have a little bit more security so it's not a garbage dump, but a vegetation slash pile. So, any questions?
Is there going to be any more mastication going on in the Highlands?
That'll be part of that project along the summit, mostly in Bailey's Canyon area, a little bit on the top. I just driving back and forth, taking my daughter to the physical therapist, noticed a lot more dead trees along. So we'll get with NDOT, see if we can get those taken out fairly quickly and clean that up.
Thanks, Chief. Director of Emergency Management, Joe Curtis.
Good morning, and wishing everybody a happy new year. It looks like the weather is going to be cooperating with us this year. I had previously had some information that it looked like it might be a pretty serious winter this year, but it doesn't look like it. It's looking like it's going to probably be a little bit more of a milder winter, which is good. So to make you feel even better, in my research here over the weekend, the weather on January 2nd and 3rd in 1875, no, I wasn't there, was heavy, heavy snow. The train was blocked and couldn't bring the mail into town. The telegraphs were down, so they couldn't get the dispatches from the East Coast and so forth. So we're doing pretty good this winter so far. The other thing is Commissioner McGuffey mentioned it some time back, and I've been working on it back and forth here, and that's the signs on the various entrances into the community that talk about being a snow-ready community. Those used to be provided by the National Weather Service, and they quit doing that. Their budget was cut for that project. So the material has been was ordered actually just this morning for new signs, because I had them taken down by DOT off of their, because it's their posts that they were on. Unfortunately, they got a little bent up in the process, so I couldn't reuse those panels. And so I've ordered new ones, and they should be done within, we should be able to have that project back, and we'll go down and put those up. I'll probably put them up myself, and within the next week, week and a half or so, as long as the weather stays good. And we're working on that. So that's about it from emergency management. We're moving along. Oh, we did, you know, we've been, I think Sherry mentioned it sometime back, that we have pretty much completed all of our signatures and so forth for all the FEMA stuff that we needed to have in place. That thing is pretty well taken care of. So now it's a process of going through all the bureaucracy of getting everything done by the higher-ups up into the FEMA and so forth. Other than that, any questions?
Is the bridge that got torn out of the Lockwood there, is that on the FEMA, is that filed with FEMA as well?
It is, but that's through the GED,
yeah.
Or GID rather.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, and they're dealing with that. I do keep some track of that. I have to call and ask them questions once in a while and ask them what the status is. But FEMA tells me that they're working right along with them. I'm not sure any kind of a completion date for that or how they're progressing with it at all. Yeah. I can check into that for you if you'd like.
Well, we offered to make sure they were going to have the help from the county as far as we can go.
Yeah, and I do speak with, have spoken with FEMA regarding that aspect, but that's almost another section of FEMA that it's not the same people that we've been dealing with for our matters.
Well, we both know that dealing with FEMA isn't an easy task either, so I'm sure they could use any support that we can to help them get that going through.
It's not always easy, but it's generally relatively easy, but it's not always fun.
Yeah.
Okay. Any other questions?
No. Thank you.
No. All right. Thank you.
All right. Our IT director, James Dean.
James Dean, Story County IT Director. Just a quick update on the data center in the courthouse. The electric has been completed and powered up, so we have 100 amps of service available over for the data center. We're using less than half now, and as we build that out over the next year, we'll probably add some air conditioning. It's already pretty warm inside that room, but we anticipated that. We had a 50-amp HVAC circuit put in, so we'll grow into that room. The fiber is terminated in this building, and we should be turning that up in about 2 weeks or so with AT&T. We'll give the public some notice as much as possible. Probably 24 to 48 hours is usually what AT&T gives me. So as soon as I have that date locked in, I'll send out a blast, and we'll cut over to the new service. That's all I have.
All right. I want to commend JD. I think in getting the server room set for the courthouse so we can make the changes to Tyler and DevNet and improve our backbone. We knew we needed to bring in better electrical service. And the first bid, JD, from just a random company, the first bid was how much?
$28,800.
So we got together with the controller and several of us on the work team, and we opted to go out to bid, and specifically bid to two local companies, Highlands Electric and Briggs Electric, both with local ties to the county. The low winning bid was
Briggs came in at $8,700, so less than half.
So.
And they started almost immediately as well.
Yeah, so it saved a chunk of money. So great job.
Thank you.
Thank you, James. All right. Director of Planning and Human Resources, Austin Osborne.
Thank you, Mr. Commissioners and Mr. Chairman. Austin Osborne for the record. I can give you two updates today. One is the lands bill. We're still working with the Porter Group, John Porter and his team, as well as Amade's office and the Bureau of Land Management, on continuing of the same thing that I talked to you all about last time. We're working on some GIS maps to get to the BLM, making some adjustments. It's getting a little bit tricky around certain parts of town where we have to skirt around certain parcels and that sort of thing, but we'll get through that. And we'll get that map submitted. And then early 2018, it looks like their team will be able to go ahead and get this bill rolled into another bill or however strategy they choose in Washington to get this approved. And I know Pat's been working with the same team on the zip code and some other matters that he'll talk about. The second matter we'll talk about is, just so you all know and our department heads know and our employees know, that our health benefits experience rating this year is unprecedented. There's an upside-down situation happening. What normally happens when the insurance company receives $100 in premium, they like to spend about $90 or so in putting out health situations, and then they have a small profit margin. And there are some months we're running 200, and the average is over 140. This is very serious, and our team is working with our LP insurance, with our broker, to come up with some strategies of what we might be able to do here in April when it comes time for renewal. Right now we're with Hometown Health. By the way, the structure is Hometown will still be required to bid for us, so we do have an insurance company to work with next year regardless. It is possible we won't get any competition or any bids because of the situation we're in. It's known that these things are cyclical. You'll have 10 good years of everything looking really great, and your premiums go down and your benefits go up, and then it's typical for a company to go through an upswing where it just happens. People get sick and major surgeries happen and certain types of situations happen. This is not one or two people that had an event. This is kind of just a pattern right now of a lot of different things happening with a lot of different people, both employees and retirees and dependents or dependents. And so that's what we got right now. It's it is a real problem, and we're expecting when it comes time for renewal, we've told our department heads, our employees, if you have a procedure to get it done now, because we don't know what we'll have to do to our health benefits plan next year. We don't know what will be available to us, and we don't know what kind of premiums will be proposed to us for our next year. And then we can only hope that the cycle will work its way out, and then we'll go back into a little bit better conditions. But this is what we have, and it is what it is.
Changing vehicles here. Have you had any new word on the cell tower in the Highlands?
No, there is no new word. Kathy's actually been calling those folks on a somewhat regular basis, and the last we heard is that we had a carrier on its way out there, but that was going to be, if I remember, right around February or so, right around this time of year. So we'll go ahead and do another follow-up and see how that's going.
Okay.
Let's see.
Thank you.
But don't get your hopes up. Thank you, Austin.
You're welcome.
Over at the Comptroller's Office, Mr. Gallagher.
Nothing at this time, Mr. Chairman.
Chief Deputy District Attorney, Mr. Loomis.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Keith Loomis, District Attorney's Office. Commissioner McGuffey had asked for an update on the status of the looking at the Alaska Sovereign Wealth Fund and how that worked and whether it's something that could be applied in Story County or not. The Alaska Sovereign Wealth Fund is a fund that is receives 25% of the mineral revenues received by the state. It's put into a fund that is invested in investments of various types. It's accumulated from year to year, and annually a check is cut to residents of the state. Now, that fund was established by virtue of a constitutional amendment to the Alaska Constitution, because there is no provision in Alaska law that allowed them to invest funds for future profit to be divided up among the residents. We do not have a similar provision under the Nevada Constitution or under our statutes. So that would require some type of legislative act in all likelihood. There is a statute in Oregon that provides that if actual revenues exceed anticipated revenues and expenditures, that a rebate can be made to the residents of the state of Oregon up to an amount of about $1,000. The Oregon statute is based upon an income tax revenue return rather than a property tax revenue. So that it's a different way of evaluating those things. What we have in the Nevada Constitution is a provision that says that all taxes must be equal across the state. That provision says that it has been addressed in other states. It says that you cannot abate taxes under a provision such as that unless there is specific statutory authorization to do so, which we do not have in the state of Nevada at this point. So I think what we're looking at, if we're looking at trying to get some abatements, is a legislative solution at this point.
It's almost like a zip code. You have to have an act of Congress. So is there other avenues that where we can compensate the residents of Story County? I mean, can we pay for their power bill 1 month or something of the year? Is there some way of looking at a different, a different vehicle to do this versus, I think we need to, we pretty much knew that the rebate is, we have to go to the state board of taxation and all that to do anything, but they're not going to do anything without going through legislature. So is there a different way we can just dance around them and do something like everybody's power bill for December? Something like that,
Well,
I don't know. I'm just shooting in the dark here.
We're subject to the Local Government Budget and Finance Act, which says how we're to establish our budgets and how we're to make appropriations for different types of expenditures, and that's all fairly set out in stone in that act. There isn't really a provision that says, yes, we can make payments to the residents for their power bills or anything along those lines. It says that if the funds in or the revenues in a fund exceed the amount of the expenditures, then it goes to the balance of the general fund for the following year, with the exception of capital improvement projects, which you can accumulate from year to year, but those have to be spent on capital improvements.
Right.
I think, Commissioner McGuffey, too, the other frustration is, and Chief Deputy D.O. Loomis and I have talked, is any solution just by its very nature is fiscal in nature. Whether we would consider paying a power bill or not, and Keith, I'd ask you to probably explain the limitations and restrictions on modified Dillon's rule as it came out of the 2015 session, but it's my understanding after talking with you some time back is that that is explicitly excluded from self-rule or home rule that we might be able to administer.
Trying to affect the tax rates through the home rule initiative is specifically prohibited by the local home rule provisions. If there's another way that potentially is out there that could be explored, perhaps.
Are you willing to look into any other possible scenarios?
I'm happy to continue.
Well, this, I don't call it a promise. It was. It was brought up by Commissioner Gilman years ago when he started to try that possibly, I was there. He said possibly once we got established, we could lower taxes or whatever. So that's what kind of started this whole ball rolling. And when I ran, of course, I ran holding his feet to the fire on this. So I feel like I'm part of it too now. So I'd like to see something happen where the residents of Story County can benefit all off of the success that the industrial parks has brought to us. And I don't know how we can do that now. It's like it sure seemed like it'd be easy to just lower taxes, but it seems like it's the deeper we dig, the more roadblocks we find.
taxes can be lower, but the benefit of that is going to be to the owners of property. Which is not necessarily going to be the residents. I think that's
right,
more of the issue.
Yeah. I think when Mr. Gilman made that statement, I don't think he was thinking that everybody, including all these companies with massive amount of buildings and land, were going to get the same benefit. I think he was looking, trying to look out for the residents.
Which runs into the constitutional issue of an equal and uniform tax rate.
Right.
Yeah.
So, exactly.
Well, percentage-wise, everyone would benefit equally.
Well, you know,
but dollar-wise, they're going to benefit. The larger are going to benefit more because they pay more.
Right. And you know, I don't think a lot of people realize that they have. We all have benefited by not having to raise taxes. I mean, I can't remember the last time we raised property tax.
Yeah.
No.
Good point.
Yeah.
And I still maintain, although it may not benefit the people that I think Commissioner Gilman, your focus has been on, which are the residents, John Doe of Story County. But again, as we get more hotels out to try, that's going to produce more room tax revenues. Now, you just heard Denny rightfully say we've got to look at modified staffing because of Pipers, and we want to try to leverage off a little bit in the Slammer Museum, too, and maybe get it some view time on Saturdays and Sundays during the tourist season. But I would tell you, once I think we can diversify enough where the comptroller's comfortable, whether or not it's the VCTC quarter-cent sales tax, the VNT quarter-cent sales tax, which, again, would have to be voter-approved on that one, we could certainly take a look at, you know, some other creative, you know, ways of at least lowering our sales tax rate, potentially. Again, what would that benefit to the average person? Probably not a whole lot, but, you know, maybe the price of a drink would go down with the bucket of blood. We already got sales tax embedded in there.
Yeah, maybe we have a, I don't know, kind of like the commissioner party for the residents. I don't know. Yeah, open house to the Fourth Ward and Pipers and the Art Center kind of thing. I don't know. Yeah, you know, I'd like to show our appreciation of their support.
Maybe we can workshop this in early February, just for bring any and all ideas, and we can run them past Mr. Loomis and see what's legal and what may not be, and build off of it from there.
Okay. Sure. Okay. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Loomis. Next up, County Manager Pat Whitman.
Oh, let me get my act together. Excuse me. Yes. Commissioner McGuffey was busy over New Year's. He asked me to update you on the zip code. Unfortunately, we're pretty much, as you can tell by the pace of things other than tax reform, things in Washington are at a grinding halt pretty much. So this is the update as was given to me by Dan Maurer with Porter Group. As a brief refresher, a legislative solution to finally address the county zip code confusion has been introduced in Congress for the last two sessions. The text reads, quote, not later than 270 days after the date of the enactment of this act, the Postal Service shall designate a single unique zip code for as nearly as practicable each of the following locations: Story County, Nevada, the other communities included are Miami Lakes, Florida, Southampton, New York, Oco, Florida, and Glendale, New York. Most recently, in 2017, the language was included in H.R. 756, the Postal Service Reform Act of 2017, which passed by the House Oversight and Government Reform Committee in March by the voice vote. The reason why there has been lack of movement on this bill since March is because H.R. 756 was also referred to the Energy and Commerce Committee and the Ways and Means Committee due to provisions in the bill that fall within their jurisdictions. Throughout 2017, those two committees led efforts to repeal and replace the Affordable Care Act and to overhaul the nation's tax code. With such major responsibilities on those two bills, they dedicated little time to other substantial bills like reforming postal service. We expect that to change in 2018, as both health care and taxes will likely be less prominent piece of the House Republican agenda. And he goes on to mention that they are not giving up their quest. We just can't get it out of the committee. And this was in a verbal briefing that I think Commissioner McBride, Austin, and I got the other day. They are looking at a couple bills. Austin mentioned, you know, there's hope that we don't need to actually get a bill that we can get some type of consensus on the land bill, but should there be a need to have clarifying language inserted into a bill, we might drop postal zip code into one of those bills too, especially if the numbers look like, you know, it's going to pass. Key there is trying to keep it as a nonpartisan issue. So that's the update on ZIP. I do want to update you, and I'm glad Justice Harrington is here, and I'm not going to put it on the spot, but for years, including under your leadership as Justice Court Judge, Commissioner McGuffey, this was the Justice Courtroom. Before that, it was in a modular out at the jail site, and before that, it was down where our comptroller's office is currently located. And more than a year ago, the district court judges got pretty well bent out of shape, saying enough's enough. This was supposed to be a short-term solution, which I don't remember it being a short-term solution. But long story short, we're under pressure, if you will, to get a solution that doesn't have Justice Court convening in here. And they're being very blunt about it, very, very forthcoming. So we've narrowed it down, I think, now to 7 options. We have a small team that I've asked to assign 1 as your highest priority and 7 as your lowest priority, taking into fact facility needs that the judge definitely has, the use of this building and the ever-increasing caseloads that are seen, you know, bringing a large number of people on any given Wednesday, upstairs, downstairs, wherever they may be. So we narrowed it down to 7 options. I have almost everybody's responses back. We're just waiting on 1. And those options seem to be right now in no particular priority order. That's the purpose of going out to a very small team and asking for their priority vote, if you will, and then we'll focus on maybe the top 2. One would be a brand new facility. Again, I'm not going to go into the pros and cons because there are no perfect solutions to this at all, but obviously that would probably be our most costly solution. Specialty modular, similar to what we had before, but perhaps buy it rather than lease it. That, again, has got, you know, quite a bit of issues, particularly since we live and work in a historic district. The Gold Hill Depot, which may not be viable at all, that would need massive renovation, and at the same time, there's some question that Gold Hill may not be considered in the Virginia Township. Probably isn't. One of the 2 district court judges strongly favors repurposing the jail here, the old jail here in the courthouse. So again, everybody would kind of cast their vote and determine. The training center that you have authorized me to go ahead and attempt to dispose of could be lifted and relocated. Initially, we were thinking down by the jail, and I want to stress that the size of that building is nowhere near adequate to serve its purpose. We'd have to do something in addition to it. But you could, in essence, move it either still down to the jail or probably more realistically now that we own the asphalt between us and Piper's Opera House. You could definitely look at a location there. We've looked at relocating a couple of functional offices from inside the courthouse, perhaps up to the Piper House, and then allowing more room in here for court. We've looked at the former Bank of America building, the conference center. So those are the ones. Once I get everybody's tally, like I said, I'll review those. I hope to have those on the January 16th agenda, so we can kick it around and begin to actually develop a plan, develop funding, those types of things. So that's my staff report, Mr. Great. Chairman.
Thanks, Pat. County Clerk, Ms. Stevens. Okay. All right, that concludes the committee and staff reports. We'll move on now to item number 9. This is the board comments. We'll take no action or public comment. Start with Commissioner McGuffey.
Yes, I don't have much to report today. I just basically will report on NACO. We had NACO, a NACO meeting right before the holiday struck.
There's a new director for the Nevada Cooperative Extension. He's a new dean. His name is Dr. Ivory Lyles, a nice gentleman. He came here for this job all the way from Mississippi, and he brought his accent, too. Yeah, he seems like a nice guy. We also had a coalition against bigger trucks initiative. They're trying to get NACO on board to limit the size of the trucks that are on the highways and the number of trailers and all that. There was a lot of opposition there because there's a lot of farmers on the board from around Fallon and Ely and Elko, and it's important that they don't have to have an extra truck running to haul trailers of hay and whatever. So that pretty much got killed on the spot. And then there's the ongoing lawsuit filed by the state of Nevada and 9 Nevada counties regarding the BLM and U.S. Forest Service's Greater Sage-Grouse Resource Management Plans. Of course, this is all about determining if they're endangered or not. So we're still fighting that. And that's all I have to report for today.
Great. Thanks, Jack. We hadn't met in a month, and of course, going over the holidays, sometimes it's a joyous occasion, sometimes not so much. This season is probably the most lost residents I can ever remember. I think we lost 7 Story County residents. Some of the folks I didn't know, some of them I knew, some I knew very well. So I'd like to give recognition of the passing of longtime Highlands resident and Virginia City business person, Zoanne Abel, as she passed away. And our condolences go to Dave. He's a local jeweler, and Zoanne went ahead, and she had her beauty salon in the same building down on C Street. Greg Sutherland, he was the owner of the Silver Dollar Saloon, sometimes known as the Pub, down there. I've known Greg probably about 40 years or so, and he was kind of an absentee owner, but he lived on the Comstock for a while and then down in Mount House. So he passed on. And Nick Bullock, he was the recent new owner of the Union Brewery. He's been in town about 3 or 4 years doing restoration work on that building. So he's passed on too. And of course, as the sheriff gave recognition to Sue Graves, longtime resident. So anyway, like it to be known that that we remember who they are.
You're a Cowboy fan as well.
Yeah. Oh, jeez.
I didn't mean to put you on the spot. Sorry.
Thanks. How do you pronounce his last name?
Eschenar.
Yeah, Jack Eschenar. He's one of our local docents and Civil War cavalry guys. Yeah, he passed away too. I think that brings us up to 8 that I can remember.
Tired of getting phone calls from the sheriff.
Yeah, no kidding. So anyway, that's all the bad news I'm going to pass on. So we'll get on to more interesting and exciting things now. We're going to move on to item number 10. This is discussion of possible action. We're going to review and possibly approve the Story County audited financial statements for the year ending June 30th, 2017. Well, Mr. Gallagher will start off and introduce our new county auditor for this year.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Hugh Gallagher, Story County Comptroller. I would like to introduce to you Joe Costanza, partner for Del Petro and Thornton. I will tell you this has been a baptismal fire for him. I'm hoping he comes back next year. I was very impressed with the way they had it. This was a difficult audit, to say the least. And you will see some of the different points within the audit, especially in probably page 1, where there has to been there's some errors in the prior statements that were reported by our previous auditors. And also, I believe on page 51, with regard to prior period adjustments. Things are going fine through the audit until we hit fixed assets. And part of the process that Joe had to go through, and I had to go through when I was in the business, is you have to balance to the beginning balances for July 1st of 2016. We have trouble. Obviously, work papers were not available at that time, so we had to go get those. But the fixed assets and the accumulated appreciation, especially accumulated appreciation, really could not be verified as of the beginning balance. So other measures had to be done by Joe to fix that. There was a long-term liability, which was the USDA loan to the fire department for their ambulances and structure engines that were not booked as a long-term liability in the previous statement. That has been corrected and has been put on as a prior period adjustment. And also pension liability. There's been some different changes in the law. The prior pension liability calculation by the previous auditors they could not get to, so they had to restate that. And so consequently, what comes down to now is that we're probably in a much better position now than probably we ever, and quite frankly, we're now in the 21st century instead of the other century. The other, as you know, Pringle CPA has been with us for a very, very long time. Sometimes these things happen, and consequently, when they do happen, you have to correct it. You can't go forward. So at least we got good beginning balances for July 1st of 2017, and we will go forward with that. Joe was very willing and able to meet with all of us, whatever information we could get him, we did. We had several meetings with our previous auditors to get substantial information and work papers. So the delay pretty much was due to that. So with that, I will give you, I've given you some analytical notes on the audited financial statements for 2017 that you are going to review and approve. Our total net position is about the same as last year, 26 million, pretty much the same. Our capital assets increased about 3 million over the previous year, and our statement of net assets increased about 500,000. Unreserved ending fund balance increased about 2 million over the previous year. Now that's every single fund we've got that's got an ending fund balance. Revenues, our taxes only increased 600,000 from the previous year. Licensing and permits decreased. I'm not sure if that's due to a slowdown in the industrial park, but that's probably one of those reasons. Our fines and forfeitures increased a little bit. People are not. I think that may be due to the Justice Court. And on the governmental side, general government, actually, their expenses decreased about 700,000 from the prior year. But the increase of overall increase of 22 million, 8 versus 22 million the prior, mostly directed to public safety. With that, our net revenues over expenditures were about 964,000 as compared to 856,000. The previous year. General fund. Most of the increase in the overall revenue for Story County was pretty much in the general fund as far as taxes was concerned. Revenue increased about 700,000, which was about 9% over of the last year. Expenditures were it was 9% over budget, what we budgeted. Expenditures were about 100,000 over the previous year, or $1.1 million, and that was actually about 8% lower than our budget. So our net was about $2.8 million. Our ending fund balance is about $10.2 million compared to 8.6 for 2016. Our fire district had revenue; their operational account had revenues of 4.7 million compared to 5.4 million expenses, and our mutual aid fund, which is what we use to do all of those fires and stuff outside of the 474 Fire District had mutual aid of $566,000 versus $445,000 of expenditure. There are those that we will have to lay a letter to the Department of Taxation because their appropriations were over what the budget was. And they were the Virginia City Tourism Commission of about $11,000, the Water System Fund of $120,000, and that was due to a pension liability. We have to now book for enterprise funds. We have to book what their liability will be in case PERS goes out of business. General fund does not have to deal with it because they're on an accrued basis, but the water system is part of that, as is the Virginia City sewer system. Both of those were major adjustments to their pension fund. Mutual aid was over about $109,000, which were equipment purchases. And emergency mitigation was over $42,009, and also in a deficit ending fund balance position. And, of course, that was January of last year, where we had spent a lot of money initially to do that. Whether or not we're going to get reimbursed for that, we don't know, because obviously through Texas and everything else, the FEMA money has, and the hurricane in Florida, obviously getting that money is not going to be as soon as we kind of thought. So that's pretty much that. Our available borrowing capability, our capacity, rose from $51 million to $56 million. We're not going to get anywhere close to that, but in case you want to go out and spend some money, we've got that amount of money to go. Our general obligation bonds are pretty much, we've got $1 million in the V&T fund. We've got $498,000 in the Water Revenue Fund, about $3.5 million in USDA. The U.S. Fire District alone is $1.8 million. The Highlands Fire Department has been paid off this year, so we won't have any of that bonded debt. The one thing that of particular interest that I always look at is the schedule of abatements on page 80, which I think last year was, I think, somewhere around $5 million. It's $45 million now, and this is the abatements of sales tax and property taxes, and a few of those things for everything out in the industrial park.
I thought it was $5 million.
Huh? It was last year. It was $5 million. $45 million this year.
$45 million this year. Okay, so what made that change?
Sales tax, pretty much. So with that, Mr. Chairman, Mr. McGuffey, if you have any questions or the floor has any questions or comments of me or Mr. Consenza, please feel free to do so.
All right. Well, thanks for hitting us with the highlights, Mr. Gallagher. I don't have any questions regarding this. I think it's all just pretty straightforward. Jack?
No, he answered my question.
Okay. Pat, did you have, did you want to weigh in?
No, I'm good. Thank you. I know it was a Herculean task for you guys. So hopefully next year we'll go much more smoothly.
Yeah, this is good. Nice clean audit, as we like to see. Okay. Well, we open up for public comment. Ms. Bard?
Nicole Bard, Story County resident. Are you going to ask for or speak to any of the material issues that they found? Because there are some in here. Passing the audit is good, but usually at the end of an audit, you've got a recommendation from the auditors on things. One, you've got an assessment of how you did on last year's recommendation, and then the auditors also put forward this year's recommendations on changes or improvements. And there is are also statements in the audit regarding some issues that they found that are questions. Are you going to talk about that today as part of this report?
I think, Mr. Gallagher,
I went through
part of the issues. As far as the discrepancies or whatever, that is going to have to be again filed with the Department of Taxation. We can do that. But if you want, if you have anything in here that you want to talk about, we can certainly talk about it.
Well, one was relating to basically the comptroller's office needing more staff as well as training. These items here. So
this
that's
one here?
That's one.
Okay.
All three of these may be worth mentioning. Just briefly.
So part of our audit is, you know, we have to look and we go through and find out if there are any really big problems with the internal control and everything, and we didn't find anything big. But part of the audit and part of what we do is try to find ways that things can be improved and to give suggestions. So we had just a couple things we talked about. One was that we have to help out writing the financial statements, and a lot of bigger counties or a lot of bigger governments, bigger businesses, they do it themselves, and we just kind of review them. County this size, it may not be realistic for a lot of the things that happen. You guys can't put yourself bankrupt to go through it, so there's always going to be a give and take. It's just something we like to point out, that it's something that we're working with the comptroller, the more that they can do, it helps us out. Again, this is more of a size issue. It's not something that, you know, is going to be fixed right away. It's not something that maybe ever can be fixed. It's just something that we wanted to bring to the attention. Just because it is an issue that comes up. A lot of times people wonder if an independence happens. We are able to do the financial statements, but we do just want to point out that we do have to help with that, and because of the size. And, you know, one thing we found working with the comptroller's office is, you know, they're pretty good. The staff there is really good, and we're very, very happy with it. So this really isn't a, again, like I said, there are two different issues that we could come up with. One that says that the statements will be materially wrong, and the other is just kind of suggestions that something could happen because, and that's just one that we wanted to put out there. The next one, a lot of the investments need to be held at fair market value. You guys are really not invested in any type of stocks or anything that really there isn't much of a difference. They kind of put at historical cost. It's a very minor difference. We just wanted to point out that going forward, it might be better to go to fair market value of the CDs. Like I said, the variance is very small. You guys really aren't in investments that really go up and down. And then the last one was one thing, and I do want to say something. You know, I know there's been a couple of talks about payments that were made, and we were just looking there to look for a way to maybe make it better going forward, a little bit more transparent, maybe just have those approved by the board. We're not really making a comment if anything was done wrong. We're just kind of looking for a way to improve internal control. Like I said, these were not issues where we think the statements are materially bad. These are just ways that we want to suggest that going forward, the things may be better. Like I said, sometimes they're not realistic. Staffing issues, you're not going to hire about 50 accountants to do a job that you really don't have to do. But we just want to work with you guys and give you suggestions. And I'll be honest with you, when you get an audit of this type, you should be getting suggestions every year. It's always going to be a give and take. There's always room for improvement. This is in no way like a fault of the county. And I don't think anybody should take anything in here as anybody did anything wrong or that, you know, things weren't being done correctly. But these are things that we would like to bring to the attention of the commissioners, the comptroller, and the residents.
Thank you, Joe.
Thank you.
You know, I think this is my fifth audit review that I've gone through, and I believe that every audit has come with recommendations to improve it for the following year, and the county has done its best to go ahead and implement those recommendations. Some years we've gotten the same recommendation time and time again. Sometimes it's too difficult to go ahead and implement the recommendations that are brought by the auditor. So, as Mr. Costanza has pointed out, you know, this audit's above board, you know. Everything, we try to be as transparent as we possibly can in every aspect of county government, and I think this, you know, goes to show exactly that's what we're doing through the comptroller's office. So,
Thank you.
And management, I would like to say, management, I mean, everyone's very open to hearing about things. I mean, this was not a combative thing. So I think that's a pretty important part, that there's an open dialogue.
Thank you, Joe. Why don't we go ahead and I want to continue on and see if there's any more public comment regarding this. Mr. Toll.
Excuse me. Happy New Year, everyone. Sam Toll for the record, Gold Hill. A couple of questions. One's kind of granular, and the other one is more of a 30,000-foot view question. I noticed that by the way, congratulations for getting the thing done. I know that anytime you dive into a project like this, goodness gracious. So in prior audits, I noticed that the debt for the voucher system for the TRIC liability was listed as long-term debt. Based upon your statement of, hey, we actually have some credit limit here, if you want to go out and borrow some money, feel free to do so cautiously. Does your reallocation of that long-term debt, or as a bonded debt, I think as you might have referred to it, change that liability reality for the county? And why did you move it?
I still think it's classified as a long-term liability. It's in the section with long-term. I think it's still considered, I think when I checked, it was grouped with the uncompensated absences, so it should not affect the borrowing.
But so does that then, as you suggested, Mr. Gallagher, does that not reflect on our credit rating and our ability to encumber the county for future indebtedness?
No, I don't think it will.
Okay. All right. So the second question is, again, more of a 30,000-foot view. As Commissioner McGuffey suggested, you know, we're looking at different avenues or trying to figure out how we can take this abundance of wealth that we're enjoying from TRIC and distributing it amongst the happy recipients here in Story County. My question to you is, based upon the realities of the fact that we need, for example, a couple of fire department or installations out in Trick, the fact that the abatements are substantial and that the revenue is not necessarily as abundant, you know, C Street's not awash with cash. My question to you is, if we had the opportunity to distribute cash after the end of this audit, would there be any in your eyes, in your estimation? Would you suggest that we redistribute any available wealth that might be coming from there? Or is there an abundance of wealth that we have access to?
To be honest with you, I think that's way above my head.
You guys, you get closer to the podium so the microphone
picks
you up.
You know, my job is kind of look at these and say if they're in the correct, you know, the correct financial situation. I like to think that you'd be able to take these then as a county and make the decision. But as far as giving suggestions like that, that's really something that's beyond my.
Okay, Mr. Gallagher, any comment on that?
Yeah, we've been looking at the redistribution for quite some time, and having a ending fund balance does not mean it's free income. Humboldt County has an ending fund balance of probably around $60 million right now. That's due to the fact that they've got net proceeds of mines. They haven't done anything. Same thing with Lincoln County, or not Lincoln County, but Lander County. You mentioned it several weeks ago, or a couple months ago, that, you know, where I'm coming from is I want to be prudent with everything we do. I don't know what's on that horizon. I mean, obviously, this next budget session is going to be a dandy because there's things out there in the industrial park that we're going to have to probably be obligated for operations. That operations is not going to be inexpensive by any stretch of the imagination. And so, I would love to be in a position to say, you know, I would love to do this, but I am so concerned about what would happen on IE 2007, where it doesn't take for one little chink and everything goes down the drain. It doesn't make any difference how many safeguards you got against it. So I try and at least from my viewpoint, try and inform the county manager and the commission and also you guys that, you know, I'd like to keep a little bit intact, to tell you the truth, because I don't know where we're going to go with it. We've got several issues on the line, and I think they will clear up by the time I think June 30th of this year will go. Hopefully before the budget season ends, so we can take a look at it, because we've got obviously issues with the industrial park. We've got a pipeline issue we're dealing with right now. It's just too new right now, Sam. And I wish I could say, you know, I'd like to take this amount and do it. We've also looked at this either as a tax rebate or a refund of sorts, and we're still in that process to see if we can do it. Now, I would rather do the refund process than a rebate process, because it's simpler, because we can understand how much we can give up at any particular time. I like that, but taxation doesn't for some reason or another. So we're still working through that, and I have a feeling by the end of the budget session, I think we'll have a pretty good clear understanding of what's going on.
Thank you. Again, congratulations on your successful punching through the first effort, and good luck to the next one. I'd just like to share your sort of cautious optimism. I'm the kind of guy who likes to pay down debt and who likes to, not necessarily, be happy with the kind of money that we have. It's important to be cautious, conservative, and fiscally responsible. So thank you very much, gentlemen. Appreciate your time.
Thank you. All right. Continue on with public comment. No more public comment? All right, then. I'll go ahead and, Mr. McGuffey, I can get a motion to approve this.
I hereby make a motion to approve the Story County audit financial statements for the year ended June 30th, 2017.
Second to your motion. Moved and second to approve the audit.
All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries unanimously. Great. Joe, thank you. Congratulations. This is the soonest we've gotten an audit done, I think, since I've been a commissioner.
Yeah,
and I know that it won't take quite as long next year because
you've got better
starting numbers to go with. So, yeah, it's great. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for coming up today. All right, let's move on now to item number 11. This is discussion of possible action. These are the 2018 appointments to serve on the state, county, and regional boards. Mr. Whitman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This year was probably easier than ever. Very few changes, as you can tell by the staff attachment. So staff's recommendation are for the following committee and board assignments. For the safety committee, Clerk Treasurer Stevens has gladly consented to continue to lead us in that important role. So there's no change. Our legislative representatives really continues to be all of us, but it is an off session. Marshall, Chairman McBride, usually attends at least a quarterly, sometimes monthly, sometimes every 2 weeks, depending on urgency, meeting that also our comptroller does, our administrative officer, myself, and others. So Commissioner McBride and others will be heading up any legislative efforts as necessary. For the Historic Fourth Ward School and Museum Board, that would be no change with Commissioner McGuffey still leading the way for us. NACO, same. Commissioner McGuffey with Austin Osborne as an alternate, no change. Nevada Works, Commissioner Gilman with Austin as an alternate, no change. Virginia City Senior Center, Sherry Nevin, no change. Lockwood Senior Center, that would be Commissioner Gilman and Sherry, no change. St. Mary's Arts Center, Commissioner McGuffey and Sherry Nevin as an alternate, no change. Western Nevada Development District, that would be Austin Osborne, no change. And we did appoint him actually after he and him were retired at the end of June of this past year. Carson Soap Water Subconservancy District, Austin Osborne with Kathy Canfield as an alternate, no change. State Land Use Planning Advisory Council, Austin Osborne with Kathy Canfield as an alternate, no change. Natural Resources Conservation District. This is a USDA organized effort. That would be Kathy Canfield with Austin Osborne as an alternate. This was one of our changes. Dean Haymore was on there. So that's the change. Truckee River Flood Management Authority. This is for their technical advisory committee. Commissioner Gilman with Austin Osborne and Kathy Canfield as alternates. Comstock Historic District, that would be Chairman McBride, no change. Nevada Commission for the Reconstruction of the V&T Railway, that would be Commissioner McGuffey, no change. Virginia City Tourism Commission, this would be our one board seat, that would continue to be Commissioner Gilman, no change. Oversight of Fire and Public Works, that would be Commissioner Chairman McBride, no change. Economic Development, split in two. We have participation with the Economic Development Authority of Western Nevada, or EDON, that would be me, no change. NNDA would continue to be Commissioner Gilman with Austin as an alternate, no change. Story County Wildlife Advisory Board, this would be once again confirm the continued appointments of Greg Hess Sr., Greg Mumhess, Jim Clark, Rob Dufresne, and Rich Backus with no changes. And on the Washoe Story Conservation District, that would be Kathy Canfield with Austin Osborne as alternate, no change. Those are our recommendations for this year.
Great. Thanks, Pat. Is there any public comment regarding these appointments? You notice that Austin's name was listed quite often. He must have a lot of free time to attend all these meetings. I said, can I get a motion to approve these appointments?
I'll move to approve committee appointments as recommended by staff.
I'll second your motion. Moved and seconded to approve the appointments. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries unanimously. All right. Let's move along here to item number 12, discussion of possible action. Consideration of letters of interest for reappointment of a planning commissioner or appointment of a new planning commissioner to serve a term representing Precinct 2, Virginia City, Gold Hill position on the Story County Planning Commission. Mr. Osborne.
Mr. Chairman, Commissioners, Austin Osborne for the record. Thank you. In this case, this Planning Commission term expired on December 31st of 2017. This is for Precinct 2, Virginia City, Gold Hill. Per policy, we had posted for a position through the public, as well as the incumbent was eligible to reapply, to be reappointed. And we received letters from the one application letter from the from Mr. Hindle, the actual incumbent, nobody else. And that letter also came with three recommendations from various folks in the community, as well as from the chairman of the Planning Commission, Larry Prayer. Our recommendation is sitting right there, is to reappoint Jim Hindle to this seat on the Planning Commission. He has been a fabulous Planning Commissioner, providing not only honorable service, but also doing his research and having equal interest for all of the different communities in the county. And serving as vice chairman now for 3 years and really bringing a level of chairmanship to the Planning Commission that's been really commendable. Because of those things, as well as his expertise and his qualifications, we highly recommend Jim Hindle to be reappointed for another four-year term on the Planning Commission.
Thanks, Austin.
Jim has done a great job. You know, you and I both attend a lot of these planning commission meetings, and Jim is always professional, asks the right questions. He's a natural fit there.
I'm just surprised that many more people didn't apply for the position, being such a high-paid salary to attend these meetings. Is there any public comment regarding the appointment of the planning commissioner? Hearing none, if I can go ahead and get a motion.
Okay. In accordance with the recommendation by staff, I, Commissioner Jack McGuffey, motion to reappoint Virginia City resident Deward James Jim Hindle III to serve on the Story County Planning Commission.
And I'll second your motion. It's been moved and seconded to approve Mr. Hindle as the Planning Commissioner for a term of 4 years. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries unanimously. Congratulations, Jim. Welcome back.
So I learned something today.
Thank you very much.
Your name is Durward? Durward?
Durward.
Yeah. Interesting.
When I hear someone call me Durward, I know something's up.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Osborne. Okay. Next up is item number 13, discussion on possible action, approval and acceptance of a National Park Historic District Preservation Grant Award for $80,000 to assist the St. Mary's Art Center with a building and site assessment project for, and the Comstock Cemetery Foundation with the Visitor Center for its rehabilitation project. Ms. Nevin.
Thank you, Commissioner McBride. You presented that item there. We applied for a grant through SHPO, State Historic Preservation Office, through the National Park Service Historic Preservation Program. We were successful, as you mentioned, in receiving those grant funds. St. Mary's Art Center is scheduled to receive $60,000 in grant funds. That comes along with a 40% match, which will be cash and in kind. The Comstock Cemetery Foundation will receive $20,000 in grant funds, $13,333 of the cash and in-kind match. St. Mary's Art Center has been experiencing some issues with water coming into the building for several years, so this is going to help us do a site assessment and condition report and make some needed improvements so we don't have water coming into the basement there, and also rehabilitate the porch that's in pretty bad shape. The Comstock Cemetery Foundation, as you're aware, procured one of the homes that was next door in the old, what is now the new parking lot, but a home used to be there. That's currently relocated to the cemetery, and they're looking to put the old porch back on there. So they've got some nice designs, and Candace has done a fantastic job in helping to kind of put all this together. So we, as a certified local government, have the ability to apply on their behalf for these grant funds. So we were successful in getting that, thanks to several other entities not applying, and they're having additional money for us. So we came out pretty well with that.
These are great projects.
Yeah, really good to see that finally the porch issue is going to get addressed at the St. Mary's Art Center.
Yeah.
It can only get worse to the point where it falls down and it becomes a safety hazard.
Yeah. We're pretty lucky that we haven't had any weather so far this year. So
right.
They're planning to work with Mr. Mel Green. He's done a lot of work on historic buildings in our county as well as throughout the nation. So he's going to come up with some reports, get engineered, and then work with a contractor to make those needed repairs. So
I have a question. Another question. This is it's stated here, this grant is administered by the Nevada State Historic Preservation Office,
mm-hmm.
with the start date of 12/6/17.
Yes, it's and kind of fell within, you know, that timeline of when your guys' last meeting was till now. So it's retroactive to December of 2016 once you approve it today.
Oh, okay.
Okay, so we have until June 30th of 2018 to spend those funds. If something comes up and we need additional time, we can always request an extension.
Okay,
great. Pat, you had a question regarding the restrictions?
Yeah, only because the National Park Service is involved. Does this have any
Covenants.
Of the ramifications that we're facing with a park grant that we actually got?
No, we'll just have covenants on those buildings. The Art Center already has covenants, so that'll just extend theirs. The Cemetery Foundation covenants will be put on that. So that's no different than what we have here at the courthouse.
Thank you.
And it's not a perpetuity thing. It's for a set amount of time.
All righty. Great. Do you have any public comment regarding this? Okay, Jack, if I get a motion to approve accepting this preservation grant.
I move to approve and accept the National Park Service Historic Preservation Grant Award for $80,000 to assist the St. Mary's Art Center with a building and site assessment project and the Comstock Cemetery Foundation with the Visitor Center Porch Rehabilitation Project, and authorization for Sherry Nevin to sign all associated grant documentation.
Okay. Second to your motion. It's been moved and second to accept the preservation grant. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries.
Thank you, Sherry. Good job.
All righty, next up is item number 14, discussion of possible action, approval of rights-of-way license agreement for power line transmission granted to Switch Business Solutions, LLC. Mr. Loomis.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Keith Loomis, District Attorney's Office. This is a license agreement requested by Switch for the installation of communication and power lines on some power poles that they have already installed within the county right-of-way. This probably started back in about the end of 2015. There was a negotiation going on between the county and Switch regarding how we would deal with these rights-of-way. It looked like everything had been pretty well figured out. The last request was to provide a drawing of the location where they wanted the right-of-way. This is back in September of 2016. And that was never produced, and so it kind of faded away. And then it became an emergency recently to Switch to get this thing approved. I have used the contract that was provided back in 2016 with the exception of an exhibit that incorporated a lot of language from Clark County where Switch also has a licensing agreement to use Clark County's rights-of-way. So this is largely modeled on the Clark County right-of-way agreement. The highlights are that it's a 20-year agreement subject to some 5-year renewals. There is a obligation to pay the county a set amount per foot of right-of-way being used up to a minimum of $500 per year. There is a provision in here that says that Switch can come back to the county and ask for an extension onto different areas of county right-of-way, which is similar to the provision that's in the Clark County provision. And what we provided in this one is that that application may be made to the county manager and approved by the county manager. This one, this is the initial agreement that we're bringing to the board for approval, but subsequent expansions of the use of the right-of-way are in this agreement to go to the county manager.
Okay. So I'm confused on if this agreement is asking for permission or for forgiveness. How does that work?
Well, it's probably a combination.
Oh, is that right? Okay. Do you have any questions, Jack?
No.
All right.
Oh, and I would add that there is we do have the maps attached to, which are not in the agenda package. These just came in last week, but they are attached to the agreement that show where the existing 12 power poles presently exist.
And if I may, I'd like to point out one of many patient people in this room that has waited, and that's Adam Kramer, one of the EVPs with Switch. He's our my principal go-to guy, and with him today is his able sidekick, Elise. Did I say that right? So, Adam, do you have anything you want to add, or you're just here for show? Okay. But Switch is a great partner. You know, in fact, this is, I look at this as a housekeeping matter, nothing more, nothing less. It just escaped when they, you know, when they came on scene. You know, I might add, there's always a win-win for us. We have screaming fast internet. Switch also was a temporary tenant of our McCarran facility, and they left it fully furnished and fully state-of-the-art cool. So if you haven't seen it, it's awesome. So they're a great corporate citizen.
All right. Okay. So before we take action here, we'll go ahead and open up for public comment.
Sam Toll, Gold Hill. Mr. Loomis, I read this, the attachments inside the minutes or the agenda here today, and it was unclear. We're granting Switch a license, or are we granting them an easement? The term license was used over and over again in what I read.
A license.
And what are we licensing them specifically?
We're going to license them to use the county's right-of-way to install their power poles for electric and communication lines. And I think that part of that's going to include possible underground installation of those utilities.
Do we have any other similar licensing agreements with other entities like NV Energy?
We have licensing agreements with a couple of wireless communication companies. One of them has facilities located here in Virginia City. I'm not aware of a similar licensing provision for Nevada Energy, no.
Is it typical for us to grant easements to NV Energy? I'm guessing we have some of those.
An easement is a permanent interest in land. And my inclination since I've been here is to
provide for licensing rather than easements, because licensing, county retains more control.
And there was some allusion to a product that might be sold. They have non-exclusive rights, but it was unclear what it was that was actually being sold. Can you illuminate that question for me? I mean, are they just simply putting in wires for their own personal use?
At this point, yes.
Okay, and then finally, I've had a chance to talk to a number of people in the Lockwood Riverbend or River District, and most of those folks are on dial-up service, as you might know, and they're in line of sight with the fabled high-speed pipe that we've got that runs along the freeway. I know that Switch has been a tremendous partner with the county. Is there any way that there could be leverage used to get them to tap a little spigot off of that high-speed line to give folks the opportunity to move from, say, 1990 to 2018 in terms of access to that bandwidth?
And I think as Adam makes his way up here, you know, I'll chime in on behalf of the county. I've found in dealing with Switch, we not only have to never use leverage, they come to the table. They come to the table for Hillside Elementary School that's in the Lockwood area. So I'm excited. Adam?
And Adam Kramer for the record. Exactly, yes. Yeah. So we've actually been working with the schools in Lockwood as well as throughout the state in areas classified as rural, so anything not Washoe or Clark. And so far with 40% of the schools in the state, we've increased connectivity by an average of 2,000% per school while decreasing the cost by 14%, including in applications as Pat had just alluded to in Lockwood. We are starting with schools, with government agencies, places that have more need currently, because that's really where the best business case is. But what that really provides as an opportunity is, and that means that somebody is tapped into the community, and then opens up the opportunity for residents and other businesses to be able to leverage that to continue to go, to continue to grow and connect into that service. So we are very committed, especially Story County being our home, to continue to expand that service as well, but had already been doing so with Lockwood Community now. I think it's been 24 months, over 2 years that since we first installed that first piece. So we'll continue to look for opportunities to support the community.
And there is, Sam, if I may add to that, there's a group that James Dean and I are working with. It's got a kind of a cornball name, but it's a great company called Wi-Fi in the Park. They have a major client that they've been for, and through James's group, we're developing a priority list of solutions, potential problems that Wi-Fi in the Park can come back with solutions and say, we would recommend you do this or this. These are the folks, I forget their major,
Viasat.
So they actually go the satellite route with apparently some great results. They do it for the Pentagon and the military. So
clearly, Switch is, you know, what I just suggested is outside of Switch's core business focus. I mean, obviously, you guys are in the business of serving data in server farms and not providing internet service to Joe and Mary Lunchbox. But the fact that the folks in Lockwood still today enjoy 52K or 56K dial-up service seems. I mean, it's frankly, it's just unworkable, and I know that there are many people out there who simply don't use the internet because they have no access. Now, if your pipeline is going through Lockwood to the schools, it would seem that we would be able to, you know, leverage that somehow and get that access. Obviously, that's a little swaying a little far from where we're at here.
We are way off track.
I understand that. So thank you very much. I appreciate it. And one last question. $1 a linear foot or $500, whichever is greater. Do we know, I didn't see the map you referred to, do we know how much money that is going to ultimately end up being in the county coffers?
I think right now we're looking at the $500.
Okay, very good. Excellent.
12 poles.
Right. Yeah, I couldn't tell how long it was. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, we're still on public comment. Hearing no more, if I can get a motion to approve this, Mr. McGriffin.
I move to approve the license agreement with Switch for the installation of electrical and data communication lines and related equipment in county rights of way and authorize the chairman to sign.
Second your motion. It's been moved in second to approve this license agreement with Switch. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries unanimously.
Thanks, Adam.
Thank you,
Adam.
Thanks for coming, Adam.
Okay. Well, why don't we take about a 10-minute recess? The noon whistle is going to blow here in about a second. So.